shot in the dark. Where he sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode, I have no idea. What is it, like 266? I'm not even going to guess. The mid-200s. I have been passing myself coming and going. So here we are. I am broadcasting from the Counterposition Studios, which is the conference room and my coffee bar, here in a center of the new evangelization, nestled, hidden somewhere in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. And we are in the middle of we're in the beginning of our intensive week. So here at the Augustine Institute, we have intensive classes where students come and they have a class for a week, like nonstop for a week. And they do all the readings beforehand and then they write a paper when they go home, but they fit all the coursework into a week. So we have a ton of new faces and a ton of extra people on campus. And it makes for about 3 to 4 times our normal volume in my shop, which is interesting to say the least. I'm super blessed this time around, though. I have a full staff right now and nobody is in one of the intensive classes. So normally we like ramp up my volume and I lose a third of my staff because they take the class. So I'm in a great position right now where I don't have either of those things. And it's a little smaller than our normal class right now. So we don't, our intensive class is normally a little bigger than this. So this is going to be an easy one. And, we're catering the reception on Thursday night. So normally I have to put this whole big catering together. So I'm feeling like super grateful that I have kind of an easy week. I was even able to take off on Friday because I am going with Jim Ducky Laurent. And if you've been a listener for a while, you know who Jim Laurent is, Ducky. We're heading off to the New York encounter, Communion of Liberation. So I think I'm gonna drag the mics with me and the recording gear. And there's a ton of interesting people there, and I'm hoping to maybe see if I can't get a cool interview or two, because Lord knows there's a ton of fun, interesting people. I was hoping to have an extra day or two out in New York, but the schedule just isn't gonna let it happen. So I'm going to let you in on my goal. My goal is to interview Michael Wallstein. Michael Wallstein, fellow graduate of Thomas Aquinas College, founder of the International Theological Institute, translator of the current version of Theology of the Body that everyone reads now, and one of the smartest dudes on earth. It plays a lot of the role behind the scenes, either with the lectionary and the catechism, all stuff. Doesn't publish a ton of stuff that's popular. Kind of keeps the things kind of behind the scenes, but just a crazy brilliant teacher. And I'm friends with several of his kids from going to school with him. And I always have a good time when I get to talk to him. So I'm kind of hoping to corner Mihail for at least a segment or two and get him on the record here on the old Counterposition. Also going to check out, I can't remember where it's at. There is a coffee house, a location of La Colombe, which is from Philadelphia originally. And I'm not a super fan of their coffee. But there's been a lot of articles written about this location in this one particular La Colombe location and how it might be the perfect coffee layout. And it's a big square in the middle of the room, and the way they do the orders and all this stuff, it's like super high touch service and they run massive volume at the same time. So I'm hoping to, like, Monday morning, go over there and just sit for a couple hours and just watch and just map out how this works and how they do what they do. So, not all highbrow coffee stuff. And Jennifer, my loving, producer is asking me if I have a show. Yes, Jennifer, I have a show. And you're listening to it right now. Well, I was just in Gallup, New Mexico. Hey, this will be fun. Let's, this is so meta. Yes. I'm just going to respond to Jennifer, on the air. There's a secret that you don't know about yet that I'm telling her about right now. So we were in, I was in Gallup, New Mexico over the weekend. A friend of mine, Bridget McCarthy, got married to another graduate of our little tribe at Thomas Aquinas College, Scott Strader. So mad shout outs and congratulations to Scott and Bridget Strader. And it was great. It was like a reunion. It's like, so I swear there were about 250 people at this wedding, and I think 3/4 of them went to Thomas Aquinas College. So it was, and Scott and Bridget are from kind of two different, times to school. And I kind of spanned almost his time into her time because I left and came back a couple times. So a huge swath of, people from my college experience were there. And so it was so good to just catch up with everyone and hang out and, you know, tell the old stories and find out where everybody's at and see, you know, everybody's latest baby and whatnot. I didn't have my latest baby with me. I had a really funny exchange. So shout out to Noelle Marrying. I was griping about being at this wedding and being single, and she made reference back to my, the 7-day love your spouse challenge that I did about my wife who lacks being. And she asked me if I was there with my invisible wife. And I said, my wife is not invisible. Invisible things have being, but they just can't be apprehended by the power of sight and the visible faculty. I mean, my wife lacks being. It's just, it's a very different thing. People confuse that. So if anybody was wondering, my wife is not invisible. My wife is not. Okay. She doesn't have being at all. It's a lack of being. And the being challenged are very, one of the problems with being challenged is that people mistake you for being invisible, but you can't be seen because you're not, right? I'm just going to start a national campaign to kind of let people understand the difference between being people who are being challenged and people who are invisible. I mean, they're two very different things. So it's such an inside joke. But if you've been listening for a while, following me on Facebook, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. If you're new to the show, I'll let you know. Back when they had that, you know, the seven day love your spouse challenge, you know, I did a 7-day love your spouse challenge, and it was always ended with me remembering that I didn't have a wife. It was like, you know, I bought this new shirt and it looks so cool. And so I put it on, I took a selfie, and I was going to, send it to my lovely, beautiful wife. And I started looking for her number in my phone. And then I realized, oh yeah, I don't have a wife and I'm completely alone. So it was like this really funny, dark, sarcastic Facebook series that I did about my wife who is being challenged. She doesn't have being, you know. I mean, she's an awesome girl. My wife is an amazing human being. She's really beautiful. She's really intelligent. You're not a bad little fast dancer. Really great on guitar. And she just doesn't happen to have being. So, I mean, we're none of us are perfect, you know. Anyway, so that was a really long aside for, suffice to say, I went to a wedding, in Gallup, New Mexico. I flew this time and just drove from Albuquerque over to Gallup because, you know, there's some high spots, some passes and whatnot between Albuquerque and here. And it was a little dicey this time of year. So we decided not to do that. Decided to just go on down on the plane. But I was running for the plane. I was coming back from the wedding and, By the way, at the wedding, I stayed at the Red Roof Inn in Gallup, and I've said this before on the show, the Red Roof Gallup Inn, in Gallup, New Mexico is one of the best deals. It's like, it's a very cheap hotel, but the guy that owns it is a friend of mine's friend. It's a friend of a friend. And he just, like, they just take such good care of the place. It's just so well taken care of. And it's a little dated, but it's like, it's so clean and so efficient, just a really great hotel. I'm always stoked by someone who takes such good care of such an old hotel every time I go there. Anyway, so I was on my way back from my stay at the Red Roof Inn in Gallup, and I stopped at this truck stop, get some gas, some coffee, and I got hamburger and some fries at this little Dairy Queen or something, played a couple rounds of video blackjack, and this guy parked this old truck, like, just almost touching my rental car. Like, a skinny person couldn't have gotten in. And so I had to, like, go get the security guard. We had to ride down. He had to go in and talk to each person in the entire place, all through the place, and ask them if they had this truck. And we finally got it moved, but it was just like, welcome to Albuquerque. And it was just like, absolutely crazy. Yeah. So, shenanigans. And I forgot to refill my rental car. I got there and they were going to charge me like $90. And I was like, no. So my super easy, I got plenty of time. I did go to Prismatic Coffee though, man. Shout out for Prismatic Coffee in Albuquerque. Sick, beautiful shop. Amazing, really cool people. Took super good care of me. One of the original baristas from Ritual was in the shop by chance when I was there. Kind of a hub, man. If you're in the Albuquerque, Prismatic. All right, well, we're going to go to the break. When we get back, I have a special treat for you. No, not Chris. Special treat Stefanik. A different special treat. But coming up right after this, who is it? I mean, you don't know, do you? You're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, welcome back, kids. As promised, we have a very special treat. And like I said, no, not Chris Special Treat Stefanik, a different special treat. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to The Counter Position. Give a warm Counter Position round of applause to the lovely and talented Pia DeSeleni.
Hey there.
That was your cue to talk, Pia.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Let's try that again. Pia DeSeleni.
Andrew, great to be back with you. I'm honored that I'm up in the Chris Stefanik.
Yeah. Well, so realm. This is That's an inside exciting. Joke. This is an inside joke with my audience, because the first time I did an interview and I used the phrase, oh, we have a special treat today. Chris is like, no, he just interrupts me. He doesn't wait for the introduction at all. He goes, actually, that's my street and that's my rap name, Special Treat. And we terrible. Went on that's and we awful. Went on this like whole big thing about how that Special Treat sounds like an early 80s rapper, like Slick Rick,
in its
Curtis
best,
Blow,
in
and Special
its best
Treat.
Configuration.
It's like the Boogie Down Bronx, you know, back in the, did you see the Get Down? Did you ever see that?
No.
That's really worth watching. It's a Netflix original series.
Yeah.
And it's set in that moment in the Bronx in the late 70s when the early, early hip hop is arising out of the disco scene. And, you know, the Bronx is burning. They're burning all those buildings down. The landlords are to get the insurance money. And there's this desperation. And this new kind of form of poetry comes up out of like this disco scene.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's amazing. Good. It's really, really good. Yeah.
Well, you know, I finished The Crown, so now I have to find something else to watch.
Oh, did you? You know, I watched the first half of the first one, and then we got distracted by something, and then I haven't ever gone back to it.
You know, it's still there.
Is that why you had Philip and Elizabeth on your Starbucks cups
the
other day?
I had to come up with something.
See,
we did Donald and Melania the other day, and then my husband said, we really need to do Bill and Hillary because they're going to spit in our coffee from now on.
Why do they not know? I'm scared to see how they spell Pia.
Well, that's how this started, because I have a Starbucks name or a coffee name. Whenever I go someplace and they ask for my name to go place,
yeah,
my name is Lucy. Nobody misspells Lucy. Once have I had anyone ask me how to spell Lucy.
Now, you know why they do that, don't you?
No.
Well, some of them because they're just messing with you. But it's actually really ingenious marketing on Starbucks' part, which ingenious in a Machiavellian sense, just like the rest of Starbucks. They misspell your name. You think it's funny. So you post a picture of it on Twitter or Facebook and they get free advertising out of it.
Yeah, most of the time I don't even let the Starbucks logo show.
That's good. See,
I'm kind of intentional about it.
See,
I think this
interview is over. You've just admitted to like being a regular Starbucks customer.
And that's when I came back to the States. It happened. It took a year. It took me a year.
I'm finding good coffee for you.
Please do. So no, this is the problem. This is why Starbucks. When I'm out and about, it started because they were one of the first places to have free Wi-Fi. Right? If you registered with them, you had free Wi-Fi. Good deal. And then it's because...
I had free Wi-Fi in my shops.
I know, but...
Before them.
I know, but your shops aren't anywhere close to me. So
you got to find you a good shop.
And the great thing is... I mean, not great. What it is, it's a known quantity. It's mediocre, but it's a known quantity.
It's the McDonald's effect.
And I know that when I go to Starbucks, I know that there are clean bathrooms. I know what the coffee's going to taste like, even if I'm not excited about it.
Right.
I mean, it's a done deal. Whereas I go to someplace that I don't know. You get
decaf too, so there's no use steering once you're in the rack.
Not true. No, that is not true. There is good decaf out there.
I think here's the thing is that in any city in America, you can find a better hamburger than McDonald's.
Right.
But you can get the same hamburger anywhere in the world at McDonald's.
And you know exactly what you're getting.
Now, the reason they can do that, though, is because the level of like chemical stuff that they do to that food to make it the same in Japan as it is here is like frightening. But if I'm traveling and I've learned how to like search. I mean, being a coffee professional, I can search and I can figure out pretty quickly whether there's a good third wave shop around. And if there's not, and I need caffeine, I'll just swing into Starbucks. Now, I'm a jerk though, because I know about their just say yes policy. So if they like, we have Pike and we have dark, like, great. I will go find the freshest bag of their best coffee.
Oh, good for you.
And I pull it off the wall, hand them, say, will you make me a French press of this?
Awesome.
And they're like, yes.
That's great.
And they're not happy about it usually. They probably spit my coffee, but actually in airports, I usually just go, give me a stupid coffee. And I just slam it and run.
When you're doing road trips, I mean, do you want to go to the bathroom at the gas station or do you want to go to the bathroom at Starbucks? Take your pick. It's pretty easy.
I tell you what, I was driving back from Kansas to here. And I was on that last stint where you're just like begging God for a tree. You're just abandon the road, something.
Make it stop being so straight.
And I'm just like, please. I'm just switching lanes just so I can make sure that the steering still works, you know? And I'm just like, I've had one too many energy drinks because there's no coffee.
Right.
And finally, I'm just like, there's a Starbucks. I so rarely am excited by a Starbucks. But I'm like, yes. It's a Starbucks.
Road tripping will do it for you.
Oh, it's so bad. That's what's at. Yeah, and I mean, in airports too.
Yeah.
But I fly United most of the time. Though they started using Ely as their brew coffee on United now. So it's Starbucks level. So I'm like,
Ely is overrated, don't you?
I think Ely's Normale blend pulled correctly as an espresso shot is okay.
Yeah, okay.
It's better than Starbucks.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So
you want to talk about something more substantial
I always have the chatty first segment, but I only had one segment to do the intro. So this is the chatty first half of the first segment with Pia. But I'm perfectly fine with doing an entire show of chatting. I'm okay with that. My audience actually likes that. They get mad when we get too targeted and too on point.
Keep chatting.
The rabbit trails are the best part. You know, I once started to write a book, and
only once
I've started to write many books, but this book, the idea was it was going to be called Small Talk. Was unimportant conversations with very important people. Mm-hmm. And I was going to try to get interviews back when Bush was president. I was going to try to get an interview with President Bush and talk to him about barbecue. He's from Texas.
Yeah.
He has an opinion.
Gotta have opinions.
Right. If you can get some famous politician to talk about his relationship to high school basketball.
Sure.
You can learn a lot about them that they would hide if they were talking directly about. You learn a lot through in the cracks in small talk.
What would you get out of Frank Underwood if you asked him about barbecue?
Who's Frank Underwood?
Oh, no. Really?
I don't know who Frank Underwood
is. Yes, you do. House of Cards.
Oh, I saw the first season.
Barbecue plays a big role in that. There's a big undercurrent theme, whatever you want to call it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should go back and watch all that House of Cards.
Well, the problem with it is it's just so raw. I feel like I have to close my eyes for the first part of it because there's always something really raw.
I mean, it's like, there's all kinds of stuff like that. You know, I tell you, I think that the best, this is something we could talk about that I think is interesting, is the turn towards the meeting of science fiction and metaphysics in what's been going on. So Stranger Things. The OA. Did you see Stranger? You didn't see Stranger Things?
No.
Who are you and how are we friends? I mean, that's amazing.
I'm sorry.
Okay, we're just going to cut this interview. We're going to go watch an episode of Stranger Things.
Come back.
Okay, Stranger Things. You absolutely have to promise me you will download the first episode and watch it on the plane home. It is amazing.
I'll try.
I mean, because especially for our generation.
Where do I watch it?
It's Netflix original. Okay. So it's a Netflix original series, and it's some people call it derivative, but it is a blatant, beautiful homage to the science fiction of the 80s. So it's E.T. meets the Goonies meets a Stephen King film, not really Ghostbusters, more like it's a George Lucas film. It's E.T. meets Goonies meets a Stephen King novel. I mean, it's perfect.
That's probably why it hasn't been on my radar.
Oh, no, you will love it. It is spectacular. Just watch one episode.
All right.
And I'm telling you.
Yeah.
People on the show that listen to the show, I've done whole shows about Stranger Things. I love Stranger Things. What a great thing. But no, just like, and I just watched the OA, which is on Netflix, and it's, Arrival, that was an incredible film.
I didn't see that either. I'm behind on my
But film. You're really behind, yeah.
Sorry.
Arrival with Amy Adams is the kind of the return of the literary think piece kind of sci-fi. But they're all kind of becoming, like even Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe, it's all getting towards the metaphysics now.
Now I think you're getting above my pay grade.
Oh, please. You have every bit of education I have.
It's all the program, all these programs. I haven't seen them. I don't know them.
All right. Well,
so
then we'll
might have to shift gears just a little bit.
All right. So no more science fiction metaphysics from Netflix for
you can do metaphysics, but not science fiction.
Okay.
That's pretty bad when you're better at metaphysics than you are at science fiction, and I'm not even very good at metaphysics.
That's a good sign, though. All right. When we get back, let's talk about. Let's talk about metaphysics. Let's talk about the metaphysics of relationship and stuff. You're teaching a class on Christian marriage, right?
I am.
All right. Let's talk about why you're here and about what you're teaching and what's going on there after the break. Does that sound fun?
Sounds fabulous.
Okay. So I was trying to get her on the science fiction and metaphysics thing, but it didn't work. How was I supposed to know you hadn't seen all the best stuff? I gave you the benefit of the doubt, Peter.
Yeah, it's just poverty of spirit.
I'm telling you what, that's just, I gotta get better guests and better friends. But we love Pia. All right, let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. We are here with the lovely and talented, what was I said earlier? Internationally famous Catholic feminist moral theologian, Pia de Cellini. Is
that... I'm going to be infamous if you keep that up.
You're going to be what?
I'll be infamous if infamous? You start stringing all those adjectives together.
You know, there's a fine line between famous and infamous.
Very true.
You know, you get this, I'm sure, way, way, way more than I do. But I mean, I'm like this tiny, tiny public figure and just kind of like famous in a small, very small pond. But I was at a wedding in Gallup, New Mexico. And this girl that's like, she's a graduate of Thomas Aquinas College, but we weren't ever there at the same time. So she's heard the legend, I guess. And so this random woman walks up to me at this reception and says, "Are you Andrew Whaley?" And I said, "Well, it depends on what you've heard." It's
like, it depends on why you're asking.
Right. It was all good. No, then it's me. Yes. Yes. If it was good, it's me. Yeah. All right. So what are you doing in you normally are in warmer climes.
I am. I'm here to teach an intensive on Christian marriage. I've got Professor Michael Tyrion, who's come in from Pittsburgh to teach part of it on the communion of persons. And also on the introduction to theology of the body. And I'm going to have Professor Ed Peters from Sacred Heart Major Seminary and canon lawyer extraordinaire will be doing a Skype session for one of the classes.
Wow.
Marriage and Canon Law 101. And then we'll have Greg and Julie Alexander from the Alexander House doing a couple of sessions on, the marriage coaching and the practical challenges that people face in marriage.
Okay, I'm going to say this on the air, and I'm not going to tell him I said it. It'd embarrass him. I think that we have a ton of really good people that have come through this institute. Good men, amazing people. And we have several, and maybe more than I've seen, but I think we've had two saints. I think Michael Tyrion's one of them. He is an amazing human being. I love Michael Tyrion. I mean, that guy is like... He's so deep and he's such a good guy and he's so humble. I mean,
So are you getting him on the show?
I'm trying to. He's only in for like 2 days. So
I know,
but he's got one tomorrow night. Yeah. So what part are you teaching on in this?
Well, we started this morning with just the contemporary crisis or situation of it, because if we don't start with that, it's going to come up throughout the course. So I'd rather spend half a day talking about the contemporary.
By crisis, you mean that we're all a bunch of bigots and we don't understand that love is love and we won't let gay people marry because we all just...
Exactly.
We're haters.
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so glad.
You should have come in this morning. You could have just...
Welcome back to the hate position. Speaking of saints that are in our... our institute, the second one.
Just passing by the studio door.
The current crisis. How would you describe the current crisis in marriage?
Well, I mean, I don't think it happened in the past 10, 20 years. I think it's been happening for almost 100 years. And it
Absolutely.
Started with contraception and then no-fault divorce. And once both of those things get factored into the marriage equation, then any relationship can be called marriage.
I think you and I are the two people in the Catholic world that have just been beating this drum where it's like, we did this.
Christians did this.
Christian middle class suburban, mostly white, look good from the outside, country club members originally did this. Where the no-fault divorce, contraception.
That's it. I mean, If we're talking, as I said in class, if we have Jack and Jill who are contracepting, not open to having children, they are in this relationship for as long as it works for both of them. That's why they have a really ironclad prenup.
Right.
Versus you know, Adam and Steve, who really care about each other, they too express their love in a genital fashion. And they may or may not have a relationship that is, you know, they may be more prone to commitment than Jack and Jill. It's very difficult to put both those relationships on the same plane and give primacy to that of Jack and Jill. I mean, Jack and Jill's relationship can really reconcile itself with its nature.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the nature of Adam and Steve's relationship is, unfortunately, it can never be reconciled. But at face value and in terms of how it's being lived,
right.
And that's one of the things that I think has been a challenge when we've been talking about defending marriage. Oftentimes the language is more anti-gay than it is pro-marriage.
Absolutely.
And we need, you know, and I've said this, I went into one diocese, I was asked to advise them on this, and I said, you can't talk about two points. One is, if marriage is so great, what are we doing to demonstrate that? Are we doing anything to teach on marriage? Are we doing anything in our parishes?
Are we modeling it in any way to people outside of it?
Exactly. And secondly, people don't understand same-sex marriage is a threat to traditional marriage because, if Adam and Steve move in on my block, chances are they're going to be fairly nice guys, people that I would enjoy having a drink with. They're probably going to bring up the property values because they take better care of their house than I do.
There was a great Onion article about Pope Benedict switching his position on gay marriage after meeting a charming gay couple while on vacation.
And it's
like, oh, they were so nice. And they invited me over to their bungalow for dinner. And
they were just charming.
They were so charming. They were so sweet.
Really intelligent. Very cultured.
See, people think that we don't, that we hate these people.
The other thing is that.
I should get one of those cough buttons.
Yeah, you need a cough button.
Right. So, you know, we do it raw here on the counter position. You get to hear the coughs and the coffee slurps.
I know, but when we talk about threat to marriage, it's not, most people don't understand. Do not, when you say threat, they're not going to think of the same-sex couple that they know or don't know. Threat to marriage is, we're having problems in our marriage. One of our kids is smoking pot and doing God knows what else. The in-laws, my spouse is about to lose a job. My spouse's health is in trouble. That's threat to marriage. That's what people think of. So I think there's a real disconnect.
Well, and the thing is that, look, we want to blame gay people for this. We want to act like they are trying to destroy marriage. No, when you turn marriage into this mutual exchange of power of attorney for a limited time, as long as we both want this, with the reasonable expectation we're going to trade sexual pleasure and we're going to share a bank account or whatever and, kind of buy a house together. When we turn marriage into that, after about 10, 15 years, some gay guy in the back of the marriage room raised his head that you were like, you gay guy at the back. We can do that.
Yeah. And I think this is one.
It's like, well, yeah, I guess you can. That's a.
Yeah. And in some places, in some countries, because of hostility to the church, the church has no process, no role in civil marriages, right? Whereas in the United States, the church can basically convalidate the civil marriage.
Right.
I'm not sure if convalidate is the right word, but something along those lines. And I think eventually, I do foresee that we're going to have to get out of the civil marriage business in order to start talking about matrimony and the sacrament of matrimony.
Right.
And that's what's different. That's what's different. We're not, the church has never been, I shouldn't say never. That's not true. Historically, it has been involved in some of the legal aspects of marriage and so forth. That's very true.
But that's when it was kind of running the game, though. It was running the legal game.
Yeah, and that's not the essence of it. And so we're looking to the sacrament. And I think this, we really need to focus more on the sacrament. It's, as you say, it's not about power of attorney. And frankly, it's not about, tax benefits either.
Well, it's like, look, I remember when Prop 8 was going on and all those debates were happening in California. Mm-hmm. And the guy that was leading the anti-Prop 8, for the pro-gay marriage side was on NPR. And I think the last honest journalist on NPR must have been the guy interviewing him. And he says, so under the law right now in California, civil unions can do this, 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 and this. So basically you have all the same rights as a marriage. Is this about the word? And there's this pause. You could hear this seething pause.
Not pregnant, but seething.
Seething. And it was just like, yeah, it is about the word. We want them to have to admit that what we're doing and what they're doing and what they're doing is the same thing. And it's like, so I said, here's what we do. Great. Let them have the word marriage. If that's what they want, great. We should have X49-376 marriage.
There you go.
We'll just come up with some big name that we don't even want to call it traditional marriage, because tradition sounds like, you know, Ivy and Brick and Downton Abbey or what. No, just X49-376 marriage. And the definition is, you know, it's one man, one woman in marriage for life, open to procreation, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, and so it, we just got to make, we got to make the word sound less sexy so that nobody wants it.
I don't know, I think that there would still be a fight for it, I believe. There's a lot. I think there's a lot at stake.
There is a lot at stake. And I think that this goes way bigger than just marriage. Because I think that there's something underneath this that is not underneath marriage. And it's also underneath the abortion conversation. It's also underneath a lot of stuff. It's underneath a lot of stuff with the climate stuff. And that is our connection to nature. And whether or not we understand the role of nature in our relationship to nature in the world.
Say more. I'm not really following the thread.
Well, we're going to run out of time. So let's do this on the last, on the last segment. Let's talk about nature and maybe our relationship to it and whether or not that plays into Christian marriage and how we see things. Does that sound good?
Excellent.
All right. Good. Good. All right. Well, we're here with Pia DeSalini. She's in town here in Denver teaching a intensive class, which is causing me to have the busiest week of the year that I always have when this intensive class goes on. So if you get a rerun later this week, it's Pia's fault, because she brought all these students here to be busy. All right, you're listening to The Counter Position. We'll see you on the other side.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, and we are here with Pia DeSalini, and we're talking about marriage and nature and Stranger Things and all kinds of interesting stuff. Welcome back, Pia.
Just a day in the life.
A day in the life. I always say that this show, if you listen to this show, it's you get a really good feel for what it's like to hang out with me.
That's true.
And
I think that's
apt. I think when you're on the show, I mean it's a version of it, but it sounds not too much unlike what you and I hanging out sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's I'm going basic. For. I want to let people in on what intelligent, interesting, hopefully a conversation even about mundane things can sound like in this world, you know. All right, so we were talking about, so I guess I wasn't being clear. We're talking about the role of nature being underneath all this. So I had this conversation.
I mean, I know there's a listener saying, how did she not get it? It was so obvious.
It's possible. How did she not get it? I'm just thinking that, like, I see all the time, we, you know, like I had this conversation with this really intelligent atheist guy came in the other day, and we were talking about, and about politics stuff, and it ended up on abortion. And so we,
shocker.
You're right. Yeah. So, but he was kind of trying to talk about it through the realm of like agency and rights and all this stuff. And we ended up getting back far. We backed up and backed up till we realized that where we were disagreeing was, how do you say what's the proper criteria to say what this thing is? Mm-hmm. And he was saying, look, persons are basically amalgamations of rights and little clusters of agency. And this real full grown person has this little parasite kind of like trying to assert its right over, but we have to side. If rights mean anything, we have to side with her, with the mom, and let her do whatever she wants, or rights don't mean it. And I said, no, you can't do. And we pulled it. We ended up going farther back. And it's like, basically he was thinking along the lines of Aristotle, like naming things by where they get their nutrition from, you know?
Okay.
And I was like, it seems like that argument, like, well, how do you name something if it has an interior life, or if it's got an end, if it's got a telos? I mean, so I think that we were so separated from nature that we don't see for the sake of
sure
in nature anymore. So we don't think in those terms anymore. But if you grow up on a farm, you don't have to explain to them that sex is for the sake of procreation, because they've got woke up in the middle of the night to help a cow get born.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
No, the point that I use time and time again when talking about this topic is that how many times do you see people are surprised that they're pregnant? I don't get that. I mean, unless you've struggled with infertility or you think that you're in an infertile phase of your life,
right?
There should be no surprise. Even the Blessed Virgin Mary knew how it happened. I mean,
right.
I'm sorry. You know,
she had no experience with
it. She knew what was supposed to happen. And she knew that it hadn't happened. And
did you get that?
Pardon?
You want to answer the phone on the air?
Answer the phone. Sorry. and it rings and rings. This is raw.
It is raw. This is radio without a net, as I always say.
No, but I mean, and you know, she knew how conception was supposed to happen, and
right.
How is this possible? And then she does conceive and she knows how that happens, right?
Right.
And we live in a society where people are running around saying that there's, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I got pregnant. And either that's exciting
right.
or it's the worst news ever, but they're surprised. And
right.
there is no time in history when this would have been a surprise for most people.
I know. It's like, I was talking to a friend of mine who's, a leftist feminist type or whatever. And she kept using the word healthcare when we were talking about abortion and about contraception. And I said, no, I thought we were just mammals. I thought when we were talking about climate change a while ago, you just kept referring to our species, but we're a species of primate, right? We're mammals.
Right.
Every mammal on earth, when it's healthy, and a healthy male and a healthy female have sexual intercourse on a regular basis, the female gets pregnant. That's called and that's one of the signs. If you get two giraffes, you put them in a zoo, you try to recreate their diet. When you finally realize, oh wow, we succeeded. There's health there.
It's because like four pandas that need IVF.
Right. They procreate. And you're like, oh well, we they're healthy. We did it. We got the lighting right and the food right or whatever, you know. Because a healthy animal, when it has sex, the female gets pregnant. And then when a female is pregnant, health is, it carries to term and is born strong, right? So what in the world, how can we use the word health care for circumventing what is health and then circumventing what is health after a conception takes place?
Well, because they've defined pregnancy as a disease. I think it was Aetna when my husband was in business school. This is one of the reasons that I went ahead and did our insurance through my business, is because the insurance that was being offered through the university, and again, I think it was Aetna, I could be mistaken, just on its list of diseases, but pregnancy. And it was like diseases and sickness. Maybe that was it. Disease and sickness or something, but definitely not a positive
right.
connotation. And so I realized, wow, we're not saving any money by going through the university. You know, for tax purposes, it could be better to run this through my business. And I can choose an insurance that doesn't list pregnancy as an illness or a disease or a sickness.
And so if pregnancy is a disease, and if the stopping of a pregnancy is health care, then it's not.
Then Margaret Sanger won.
Margaret Sanger won. Children are basically walking tumors that we didn't get to in time. And it's like they're these little parasites or what. It's like it really creates a hostility towards children and a degrading of the human, the idea of the difference of a human person. And I think that affects the rest of everything. And it certainly affects marriage.
Well, absolutely. And it affects, I mean, it also, it affects what we understand the nature of the human person to be. It affects what we understand marriage to be. I mean, marriage has turned into, now it's turned into, you know, a secular sacrament. And I do intend to use that word sacrament. It's a secular sacrament for adults to be happy. And it is not a sacrament of gift of self. It is not one that involves sacrifice. And it's almost a very atomistic sacrament because it's two individualized individuals, sorry to be redundant, that want to form some sort of a union. But if you just have two people kind of focused on their own needs and first of all, focus on the union. Even what is good for the union? One of the things that I found fascinating, some marriage therapists will say, the patient is the marriage. You, Mr. Brown, are not my patient, or and neither are you, Mrs. Brown. The patient is the marriage. Mm-hmm. And I think that even married couples could begin to, all of us could begin to look at marriage like that. That what it the first, I mean, now there are some metaphysicians that don't like this language, but I think it's interesting. The first union that is created is the marital union. It's something, and John Paul II in one of his homilies said, you have, to married people, he said, you have a duty to protect that union from the moment that it's created. In other words, when it's ratified, you're in front of everybody, hopefully, you know, and the bride and groom say, I do, to each other. Then he says, you have a responsibility to protect that union. And so, you know, I mean, let's take it out of the realm of talking about self-sacrifice and so forth. But what are you doing to protect the union? Something constructive to build that up and to support it. We don't, that's not supported by the understanding of marriage that most of us have.
No, where we see ourselves as two people doing something as opposed to two people becoming something.
Or creating
something. And we see a demarcation between that creating and that becoming too.
Yeah.
So, and even in Catholic circles, you'll hear people make this hard distinction between the unitive nature of marriage and the procreative nature of marriage, where it's like, really, those two things are ordered. I guess
you can't have one without the other.
And I think going full circle back to this concept of nature, you look at any other species, the idea is that this union exists to make more of these and make sure that they become healthy, strong individual members of that species that can then go on and do that themselves. Right. Marriage is for the sake of family.
Right. And also we've always throughout history, it's been understood that it is good to know who your parents are, where you come from. And that bond needs to be protected. I mean, the very word marriage comes from matrimony, which comes from the Latin mater, mother, right?
Wow, you know,
it's a
sacrament
about the mother to know obviously we know who the mother of the child is, unless we're talking about, you know, assisted reproductive technologies. But for thousands of years, we've known who the mother is.
Right.
So it's a way to legally and publicly tie the father, bind the father to the mother so that the child knows through matrimony, the child knows his patrimony.
Right. It's like, it's almost, we've almost gotten this situation where it's like the ideal, if we kept going the direction we're headed, we'd end up with like Sparta or something where, you know, Iceland is kind of like that, I've heard, where it's like, if you get to a certain age and you want to have kids and you're not married, I mean, you just aim for guys with good genes and, till you have a kid, and the question of like, well, who, there's just no stigma to it.
Well, I mean, at least they're looking for some criteria. I mean, overall, we have more than 40% of all births are to single moms. And in some communities, the African community, African American community here in the United States, it's upwards of 70%.
And that's just considered normal. Well, alas, Pia, we've gotten to the end of things yet again. So it's always fun having you on the show. Thanks for coming out.
Hey, thank you for having me.
All right. Well, we'll get you back on. If you have more time this week.
Sounds good.
You're more than welcome. I have to do a show every day.
You should come to California.
I really do need to come to California. We'll just do a whole week of
counterposition.
It is totally better. It's pretty nice right now, though. All right. Well, let's pull the plug. Bob the Cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I'll take your place in my old stone. I'll take your place, marble stone.